Twisted Roots by A.G. Parker. Read by A.G. Parker. Chapter 20. Witch. The word drifted across his mind. We call such women so because we have no other name. Catherine Arden, the girl in the tower. I can go alone, she eyed Layla. But it would be easier with two of us. Layla exhaled and straightened her back resolutely. I'll come, she said, managing an anemic smile. Besides, I'm the one with the power here. Jacob's hand darted out and caught Layla's wrist as she tried to leave. Be careful, he warned. His gaze was as intense and vice-like as his grip. We will, she said, although she wasn't sure what that meant. They left Jacob with Matty and headed off through the grove and its darkening recesses, the shadows whispering as they passed. The tree lay at the farthest boundary of the land, past the open clearing where Layla's father had often chased away teenagers with cans of budget brand cider and pungent-smelling joints. In the centre of the clearing, a charred circle still blackened the earth where they'd lit a fire only weeks ago. A little way beyond the clearing, the grass gave way to pale chalk and then, abruptly, a ditch. Its bank struck steeply downward, almost vertical in some parts. Its sides were tangled with dead roots and loose rounds of chalk. The smell began there. It lingered in the low parts, sneaking its way into nostrils and lungs with putrefied stench. It's the rot of the undead, said Lorna, as Layla retched and coughed. It's always smelt like this here. There's no getting used to it. But I've never smelt it, or seen this part of the woods. How can this have been here all this time and I've never noticed any of it before, not even the ditch? It's protected. There are charms surrounding it. The elders couldn't risk village folk wandering around here and disturbing the witch. I don't know how Jacob saw it. He shouldn't have been able to. She placed her hand over her nose and tried to climb up the furthest side of the trench. A root snapped off under the weight of her hand. She emitted a low snarl of annoyance. The going was hard. The depth was less than 7 foot, and yet, when at last they summited the top and hauled their way out, they were exhausted. Their fingers, which had dug, clawed, and gripped, were cramping and bleeding. They lay on their bellies, fighting the body's urge to pant and suck in air lest they should taste the reek and wretch. Layla rolled her eyebrows up to her brow. A few hundred paces over barren, stinking earth reared the tree. Nothing grew in the no man's land between. The thought came unbidden. It's watching me. They staggered to their feet. In the distant space at their backs, birds still cawed, and the occasional rumble of tyres over tarmac marked the road. But here was dead. Heel first, then toes flattened down, hand in hand they silently paced over the ground, toward the tree. The stench worsened. It became an all-pervasive fug that stripped the bones and lurked around the senses. The tree was not the same as it had been in Layla's dream, but Layla felt the same oozing dread throb inside her as she approached. The trunk was well-rooted and solid, as though it had sucked itself back into the ground. It stood insolent and strong. Thick lines like water-run rivulets scored its length and spread up into its head. The branches that extended from its central trunk were few and stumped, like amputated limbs. Beneath it, the small carcasses of animals and their inedible components adorned the blank earth. They walked around its breadth, eyeing it for signs of life or movement. It remained silent. The air was yellow and cold. They waited for hours, crouched away from its brutal shape. Layla tried not to think of the conversation she had had with the witch. Do you know who you are? Who you were when we walked this land centuries ago? I hope soon you remember. Layla tried to put it out of her mind, but she'd felt it. She'd walked amongst the dead in the village, performing rites, lighting pyres. She'd been with the elders as they hunted the witch. She looked sideways at Lorna and wondered if she'd been there too. We look different, do we? Each time we're reborn? Lorna turned to her, brow creased. She glanced back at the tree. Yes, I suppose. I mean, I've never recognised faces in my memories of past lives. She returned her gaze to Layla, the furrow in her brow deeper, her mouth pinched. What's this about? Layla knew she couldn't tell her aunt. She was one of them. She'd been there as they'd cut out the witch's tongue, and yet instinct said to keep quiet. She shrugged and stared pointedly at the tree. Just wondering. They stayed in silence after that. Eventually, as dusk grew heavy, Lorna spoke. I think she's gone, she whispered. Layla peered around at the landscape as if expecting retribution from those words, but nothing stirred. The two gingerly unfolded and stood, taking in the view. It'll be a while before the land recovers, but it will. Nature has a way of doing that, said Lorna. Layla still looked unsure. She could not imagine a place so inherently filled with malevolence becoming lush with blossoms and children in picnic blankets. They turned away and moved in the direction of home. They relayed the good news to Jacob. His face had already gone a long way towards being healed, courtesy of Lorna and her herbs. He, too, had news. The hospital called. Your dad should be ready to come home tomorrow. One side of him grinned at Layla. They said he's to be booked in for tests, but they're happy to discharge him if there's someone at home to look after him. Lorna gave a fragile smile and turned to Layla. I'd be more than happy to stay for a while if it gets him home. The next day, although her body felt exhausted, Layla was awake with the dawn chorus and preparing for her father's return. A sense of unease prickled at her stomach and made it impossible for her to concentrate on her tasks. She sought refuge in the familiar arms of the oak. Its old limbs swayed as she climbed its height, and it felt to her as though it groaned through its trunk and sorrow flowed through its leaves. She clung to her perch and watched. A skylark fell from flight and dropped the edges of its song. The vast blue before her was blank. The waters of the stream no longer chortled but seemed choked by their passageway, and no one paddled in its cool shallows as they once had. And where blankets and picnics had once strewn the green under the feet of children and families, there were only stacks of flowers wrapped in their cellophane sheaths, wilting in the sun. A reminder of death. The rhythm of the village had changed. The village hum was strange, strained. The tin sounds of machinery clanged erratically. Neighbours' voices pitched and fell in tense discourse, but there was no chatter. The villagers were far from laughter, and when the church bells rang, they only seemed to intensify the gap between peace and terror and show the village to be so deep in the grip of melancholy that even their god construct stood empty and useless. The reverberations swirled darkness around the woods. From their depths, Layla heard the movements of creatures untouched by daylight and, for once, in the sunshine, she shivered at the thought of their prowling. The house beneath had yawned itself awake, and Jacob and Lorna had begun skulking their way around its limits, making coffee and nibbling burnt toast. The smell wafted up into the branches of the oak and reminded Layla that food was a necessity. She trailed the scent back to the house and joined the others in the kitchen for breakfast. When they'd picked their way through their plates, Layla walked Jacob back to his front door, opting to use the road rather than scale the wall. The street was quiet, as though news of the village's plight had staved off the rest of the world from even using the village as a thoroughfare. I'm glad you're okay, Lay, and I'm really sorry about... Hey, it's fine. I understand. If it weren't for you, I'd be a total mess right now. Thanks, Jacob. They hugged goodbye and each returned to their home. Lorna was waiting, one leg suspended in the air and the other in the footwell of the van. She jerked her head toward the passenger side. Wanna come? Layla's face creased into a grin. She ran around the van and hopped in, her heart skipping. Here she was, everything back to normal. Just a girl on her way to see her dad. The hospital lay about an hour's drive from home, and with every turn of the wheels, Layla felt her excitement wane. Her thumbnail picked at her bottom lip for the whole journey, peeling away thin layers of white skin, mile by mile. What if the witch isn't dead? Don't worry, love. He'll be fine. Layla's gaze remained fixed on the passing carousel of colours and signs. He was horrible. He wasn't himself. Black letters on yellowing whiteboards led them through the unfamiliar grey territory to the hospital. "Look, he sustained a lot of damage, but he's still your dad. Once we get him home and sort him out, he'll be right as anything. But he needs you, okay?" Layla looked into her aunt's determined face and felt her worries subside. The love for her father sliced through the niggling shrouds of doubt. "Okay," she said. The ward that held her father was at the end of a myriad of white corridors and bleach-stinking floors striped with coloured lines. Layla saw a collection of shoes, rubber-squeaking trainers and clip-clopping heels, pass by as they traversed its disinfected labyrinth. Some travelled by wheels, self-propelled or pushed, broken-limbed or invisibly afflicted. Others shuffled by, painstakingly covering floor space. The nurse at the reception ignored them. A stacked barrier of folders and reports crowned the desk. Along the walls, the human contents of the waiting room sat on murky-coloured plastic chairs and coughed and raved and shook and picked. Occasionally, a door would open and their heads would sway to its sound like the heads of wheat turning in the wind. Elliot's room was small. In fact, it wasn't his at all, but a shared blank space divided by a pleated blue plastic curtain. His roommate wasn't in. He sat on the edge of his bed, staring into a place no one else would ever see. Lorna listened and nodded with patient respect to the advice the doctor gave, reassuring her that she'd ensure Elliot would take the prescribed medication and attend the follow-up appointments. Layla stood behind her aunt, taking it all in whilst at the same time remaining trapped in a sort of muzzy haze. Her father didn't look at her. Every so often the doctor would smile down, showing pearly white teeth. They walked back along the corridors and into the car park. Layla thought the sunshine made her dad look more bewildered, the hollows in his cheeks more pronounced, but perhaps it was a trick of the light. Once more the van rumbled over the chewing gum mottled tarmac. Layla was pressed uncomfortably between her dad and the gear stick. Lorna patted her leg and gave a small sideways smile, but the journey was silent. Curtains twitched as they drove through the village and heads pressed together with whispered words and gossip-hungry, gleeful mouths. The more bitter and painful for the victim, the juicier the rumour was, and with great relish devoured. Scandal was a great alleviator of the tragic. Jacob was standing with his hands in his pockets, scuffing his boots on the gravel of their drive. His face was a black cloud in which darkened eyes and troubled, gnawing mouth lurked. Elliot stepped out of the van, almost as reflex. He approached Jacob, but only because he stood in between the van and the back door. He stared blankly through the boy and wondered why the door was not open. Jacob opened his mouth to speak. "We can discuss that later, Jacob," cut in Lorna. She beamed for all the world like there was a party inside for them to get to. "Let's just head into the kitchen and put that kettle on, hmm?" Jacob tried again, but Layla caught on and swiftly kicked him in the shin. She nodded at her dad, still baffled by the door. He turned at the jangle of keys and shuffled his body aside when prompted. Whilst Elliot was manoeuvred into a chair, Jacob pulled Layla into the living room. His voice grated with urgency under its hushed husk. "The witch isn't dead."
"What?"
Layla felt her stomach plunge into ice. Lorna came in. "But someone else has been found. This morning. There's something else too." The kettle began its arcing shriek with a low whistle. "The bodies. It's pretty clear they'd done it to themselves. All of them. They'd hung themselves." Layla felt sick. "They found them in the park. Lines thrown over the swing set. The mother was still kicking when they got to her, but her kids, they were... Well, she'd helped them. Then hung herself." Layla felt herself take a sharp intake of breath. Lorna swore under her breath and any pretense of happiness vanished. The kettle reached its peak and sent its screech through the house. Lorna turned to the doorway and found Elliot blocking it, his body awkwardly straight and rigid.
"Knife."
She flinched. "Elliot, I was just coming to..."
"Not Elliot."
"I was coming to get you too, Lorna."
He flicked and twisted the silver gleam through the air beside him. His lips were tight and blue, peeled back over a sick grin on his face.
pretty little picture they made on their family outing. Lorna took a step backwards, her arms out in front of Layla and Jacob, while Elliot's eyes, like beetles red with fire licking across their shining backs, flickered over them. They didn't move. Couldn't. Yes. Oh, so pretty, with their tongues poking out and their eyes all a-bulging. Beautiful. So full of life. The knife jerked in emphasis of each word. Get out of him. The witch moved Elliot's body forward. Lorna retreated, pushing the children back as she went. He bent down and cocked his head to stare at Layla. You weren't very nice at all, sweetheart. You tried to get rid of me. Naughty, naughty. His smile was placid, mechanical. Naughty girls don't get to play with Daddy. The blade was a glint of silver. Blood appeared. Elliot's hand gripped the enamel handle of the knife as he seesawed it down over his ear. Chunks of flesh dropped to the ground. His laugh pierced the air in high manic bullets. The knife was moved to his throat. Dad! Lorna! Do something! Lorna snapped back into movement. She grabbed the lamp from the nearby table, kicked his knee, a sick crack clapped, and smashed the heavy base over his skull. He dropped to the floor, the knife inert and mundane. Jesus, Lorna managed. Get some rope. Tie him up. Layla! Layla! Make a shield around him and a doorway through to the lighthouse. They had been in the dim shadows of the lighthouse for hours. Lorna had taken Elliot into the safety of the hidden cavern, woven a containment charm and tipped a sleeping draught past his unconscious lips. When they'd realised the implications of what had happened, Layla called Matty. I can open a portal for you. You can come straight here. We'll keep you safe. There was silence and then... I'll stay. But you'll need someone to fix an eye on what's happening here. I'll stay, she repeated. I'll keep tabs on the witch, give you updates. I can't do much, she sighed, and Layla could picture her massaging the crease in her forehead as she spoke. But I know better than most what this witch is capable of, and any way I can help, I will. Layla couldn't speak. The lump in her throat threatened to explode into an endless course of tears. As though she could sense it, Matty's voice softened. You do what you have to do, Layla, and so will I. Layla placed the receiver down after their goodbye, the gravity of the situation hitting her harder at that moment than it had before. She returned to the others, a sense of hopelessness creeping at her edges. Matty? Layla shook her head. She's staying. She says she'll give us updates on what's happening in the village. Lorna paused to fix Layla with a sympathetic look, nodded, and then returned to analysing Elliot. Despite the precautions of the charms and sleeping draught, the feeling of unease had yet to dissipate. But it took only minutes before Lorna broke the quiet melancholy. I think I've got it. Layla and Jacob stirred, but held their distance, reluctant to approach. The witch controls her victims by sending out part of her consciousness in dust particles from the tree. It's similar to how she took energy from you, Layla, sort of. Only, once infected, the particles enable her to influence the victim's movements. When she's finished with them, the particles return to the tree, transferring the energy from the victims to her, and their deaths cultivate a sense of panic amongst the survivors, leaving her with more potential victims. It's a perfect blend of magic and biology. So my dad, Layla slowly began. He'll be fine. All we have to do is find a way to starve them without killing the host. And, she said hurriedly, seeing the panic on Layla's face, that should be easy, now that I have them in front of me, and I can probably find a way to treat whoever else she tries to infect, provided we know who they are and can get to them in time. Layla nodded and shuffled upwards against the wall until she was standing again. How come she didn't infect us then? She asked. The lessons we've done together. Lorna paused, and when she was sure he was staring into the space that Elliot occupied, gave a quick twitch toward Jacob. They set up your body and your mind so that you're not receptive to control like that. It rejects anything that comes close to trying.
In short, the spores can't latch onto you because of your strength of mind.
The words were received with silence, knocking around the cavern until they'd been absorbed, really absorbed, by the occupants. Finally, Jacob said,
"So what about me?"
Layla spied him from between the triangle in the corner of her eye. He'd kept staring at Elliot, transfixed and pale.
"Jacob," began Lawler softly, "there's no way anything can get to you with your resolve to be so bloody difficult."
She managed an awkward laugh, but it was a laugh that Layla had heard from her aunt before, its texture brittle, the tone tinny.
"The witch goes for the weak or fearful. Besides, we're not going to let anything happen to you. You'll be here, and she's not."
"My dad was weak. Sam was weak."
Layla saw the spark of anger flare in his eyes, and she silently begged Lorna to rephrase the facts into something less blunt.
"No, I meant we all have our insecurities, anxieties. Everyone struggles, but..."
Lorna spread her hands, reaching for words.
"The witch preys, in the early days of her return at least, on those who feel isolated, hopeless. It's easy for her to walk into someone's mind when that person believes they have no one to turn to, when they feel alone. As she gets stronger, she'll be able to take energy from anyone. We all have cracks in our armour. We all have doubt and sadness and guilt and grief. We're human. Look."
She put her hand on Jacob's shoulder.
"I shouldn't have said what I did. It was wrong. Someone who struggles through each day isn't weak. In some ways, they're the strongest of us all. I just meant, you'll be fine."
A corner of Jacob's mouth twitched, but in the darkness of his heart, he felt unsure.
"Now, I just need to collect a few more things and then I'll be ready to begin."
Lorna grabbed the bag that had been used for their picnic just days before.
"Wait!"
cried Layla. She clasped her aunt's hand, desperate to drag her back into the house.
"What about Jacob? Are you sure he's okay? What if..."
Her words died out, but the sentiment behind them echoed frantic in her eyes. Her shallow, jittering breath galloped away from her.
"Layla, he's fine. And if he's not, you know you are. If anything were to happen, you run and come find me. He can't get to your dad or the witch's spores. He's safely sealed in.
But I doubt Jacob will go that way, love. He's too far from the witch for her to have a great effect, and those spores start dying out if they don't get fed." She gave Layla a quick kiss on the cheek.
"I'll be back in a flash. Hang tight, sweetheart."
Lorna walked off down the path, leaving Layla at the intersection of the cultivated garden and the wilds that surrounded it. She felt the jagged edges of panic grate and nick at her insides. She felt so alone. Her dad was unconscious, Jacob needed her, the village needed her, and her aunt's speech to Jacob had probably done more harm than good. But what could she do? She barely understood anything herself. Inside, something was brewing. Fear need only get a minor foothold before it spreads like a cancer, as Jacob was about to discover. End of chapter 20. Twisted Roots was published by Wild Wolf Publishing and is available on Kindle via Amazon or as a downloadable PDF via my website. The links for both of these are in the description of this podcast. You can follow me on social media at twisted_roots_agparker or a_g_parker on Instagram. Please head to my website for other details and to keep updated with my poetry, performances, fiction, articles, and more. I hope you enjoyed listening to this latest chapter of Twisted Roots and that you tune in next time.